It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Atamarie, I'm good, thanks, Rachel.
It's nice to speak to you on a very gloomy morning in Tamaki Makaurau.
It's gloomy out there, eh? It's, I just wish it rained. We need the water, but it just looks gloomy and cloudy, and it's miserable without providing us the benefit of the level of rainfall that we need. But who knows? Maybe we'll get that later in the week.
Exactly. Hey, we've got a lot to get through this morning. We're going to talk a little bit about Auckland's housing supply and a wee bit about some of our native birds, especially the fairy terns. But we're going to start by talking about the Tupuna Maunga authorities. They've been in the news a little bit about fireworks and also about the trees on Mount Albert. Let's just start with the really basics. What is a Tupuna Maunga authority, Phil? What do they do?
The Tupuna Maunga authority was set up as a result of what was called the Ngā Mana Whenua o Tamaki Makaurau Collective Redress Act in 2014, and essentially what that did as part of the Treaty of Waitangi settlement process is that it vested the Crown-owned land of the 14 maunga, the volcanic cones, into the 13 iwi that make up the Tamaki Makaurau Collective. So that was then to be jointly administered. The ownership is vested in the iwi, but to be jointly administered by the iwi working with council, which carried out the management role of those reserves. And what the Act talked about was the restoration of the values of the maunga, and one of those values was that it should again be part of the natural landscape of the city, and the Maunga Authority has set out to remove the exotic trees gradually, maunga by maunga, and to replace them with native trees. Now, often that's uncontentious. If you looked at Mount Wellington, Maungarei, the pine trees weren't a great feature of that mountain. I know in the Big King and in Three Kings, which I know quite well from my electorate days, a lot of the trees were pretty scruffy, and probably some of the ones in Owairaka aren't great species either. They either need to be removed for danger purposes or because they're not just fitting trees, but there will be some nice exotic trees amongst that. And what part of the local group has said is, hey, we agree with the end objectives of the Tupuna Maunga Authority, but we'd like it done more gradually. We don't want to upset bird roosting, and some of those trees we don't think need to be removed immediately. So one group of the protesters are pretty reasonable, and they say, hey, we share the objective, but we just want it done in a slightly different way. And a couple of other groups have jumped on the bandwagon, Hobson's Choice, and said, this is Maori acting arrogantly, and another group is involved in a number of protests, and I'm not sure why they're involved with Owairaka. But what I've tried to do, we're not the decision maker. Council doesn't make the decision, so it appoints people to the Maunga Authority. Three of the 12 are from the governing body. And what I've said to the Tupuna Maunga Authority, hey, why don't you guys just sit down with the people who've got a reasonable case to make and say, look, if we agree on objectives, let's work out the process and see if we can improve the process. Though the Maunga Authority says, well, look, we advertised it, we said what we're doing, we took submissions, we've followed the right process. But it's always better to try to talk an issue through rather than to have a confrontation around it.
So a lot of people have been saying on Twitter, I've been reading people's tweets about this, that it's practicing kaitiakitanga to be regenerating these maunga with native trees as well. Do you think that there needs to be maybe better education or better access to understanding about those regeneration processes, so that we don't have this kind of really intense heatedness around it?
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. I mean, the concept of trying to create pathways for native birds across the city and regenerating native bird life and regenerating some of the beautiful native bush that once clad some of those mountains, while keeping other space open for people to use as playing fields, etc. I think the objectives are fine. And just when you have a situation like this, it indicates a bit of a breakdown in communication. And, you know, the role that I can play, I guess, is to try to encourage both parties to come together and talk it through and see if there's common ground. In the end, the Maunga Authority makes the decision, and in the end, the government of the day did return the ownership of that land to iwi. So they become the ultimate decision makers by virtue of the fact that they own the land. They need, and I think to a large extent they have been sensitive to realising that these are precious, they're tonga to all of the people of Auckland. And it may be a case of simply, hey, can we improve the communication? I hope that is the situation, and I hope that we can work that through.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the housing supply in Auckland, because apparently we're catching up with shortfall. What can you tell us about this, Phil?
Well, the really good news is that in the year to the end of September, the latest figures that came out at the end of last week, we consented 14,634 new dwellings, and that's a 14% growth over the previous year, which was also a growth over the year before that. And why is that good news? Well, you know, everybody knows that there was a housing crisis in Auckland, and it consisted of housing shortage and housing unaffordability, and the two are linked. As long as the growth in housing doesn't keep up with the growth in population, that puts pressure on prices both to buy and to rent. So, you know, to put it in context, we consented more houses in 5 months this year than we did in the entire year just 7 years ago, 2012-13. And we're now actually meeting, I think, or very close to meeting population growth with housing growth. But there's still a backlog of about 40,000 houses shortage that we're estimated to have that we need to catch up on. And I suppose the other good news is two things. One, we're doing a far greater range of housing now. It's not just standalone houses on little sections. We're doing apartments, we're doing terrace housing, we're doing standalone housing. And most of that's coming within the existing urban boundaries. So we're becoming a more compact city, and that's a good thing as well.
That definitely does sound like a good thing. Do you think this could have, you know, a positive effect, I guess, as you were just saying, on the cost of renting in Auckland? Do you sort of anticipate that this could be potentially more affordable than it currently is, which is quite high?
Yeah, we are still high, and I think the Treasury report says that we've got the highest the housing costs in New Zealand across the OECD, and that's not a record to be proud of. Obviously, meeting demand with supply is one big step towards it, but the market doesn't actually provide for all parts of our society. So there are people that, because of their low income, have affordability problems and can't meet market prices, and that's why we need a big increase in things like social housing. And it was great being out at the Salvation Army where they've built 52 new apartments in Royal Oak for people off the urgent housing waiting list, and seeing, you know, beautiful they're one and two bedroom apartments. They are four stories high, but set out well with, you know, plenty of ground for any kids that might be in there to play on, social services provided. The government is probably building more state houses than we've seen in the last 30 or 40 years in any particular year. But the truth is it probably still isn't enough, and we need to get more social housing, good quality, and meeting the needs of people, because as long as you're still paying huge rates to keep people in motels because they are otherwise going to be homeless, that's not a great investment. We'd rather make a long-term permanent investment in the housing stock, and the government's making genuine efforts to do that, but I guess from the Auckland perspective, I've just got to say, Great progress, but we still need to do more, or we're still going to have this situation where a fundamental human right of shelter is not provided to all of the people in our city, and it needs to be.
Well, let's talk a little bit now about native birds. They've been the hot topic across the country with Bird of the Year.
Yeah, go the hoiho.
Did you vote for the hoiho?
No, I didn't vote this time. I thought it was a good choice. Yeah. It's a bit like I say to people, did you vote in the local body elections? No, I meant to, but...
Exactly. Well, we're talking specifically about the ferry turn this morning. We spoke to you about this a couple of months ago. Farrah Hancock Murdoch from Newsroom has been doing an ongoing investigation into an illegally constructed dam that's been blocking the food source for the critically endangered Fairy Tern. And now the Environment Court has said that central and local government departments should have been doing more to remove that dam and monitor it. What is it looking like from council now? Does it seem like this could be something that happens? This dam gets removed?
Well, the road as a whole won't be removed, the crossing, but it needs to allow for the passage of the fish that the Fairy Tern feed on, and that's really important. And I was told, and I think I said on your program some months ago, that the structure was compliant with the unitary plan and the requirements under it, and that was based on an ecologist report that we were given to that effect. The Environment Court went up and did a site visit, and for reasons that I don't understand, what they saw was different from the pictures of what our ecologists took, and the structure needs to be changed, and it will be changed. The problem with the court case is that the Fairy Tern Trust ended up taking the wrong party to the court, and the court found against them but said, you've still got to fix the problem, and I think the court is right. We have to fix the problem, and I understand, I've talked to my people today, and they will be, they're sending a couple of ecologists up there and a monitoring officer. They'll be talking to the developer. The developer's obligation is to ensure that the fish weir does work and is compliant, and that needs to happen. I mean, the Fairy Tern is an endangered species. I think there's only about 37 breeding age Fairy Tern remaining. There's a range of things that I know that our people are doing, our environmental people are doing, to help protect their breeding grounds, etc. But they need to address this issue as well, and we'll report back to the Environment Court by the end of this month on the changes that have been made to that structure. So it's a case of our people talking to the owners, but the thing seems to be far more complicated than it ought to be. You know, Land Information New Zealand's got interest in it, the Department of Conservation, the developers TANL, plus council has interests in it, and God knows why you had to take it to court, why you couldn't simply sit down and get all people on site together and say, this is the situation, but that didn't happen. I believe it ought to have, but let's now fix the problem, because the survival of the species is the paramount concern.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time as per every week, Phil. We really appreciate it.
And I really appreciate the chance to be on the program. So go well, have a good day, despite the gloominess out there.
Cheers, you too. We'll speak to you next Tuesday. Bye.
Okay, kaki day. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff. It's